Hey guys, you are listening to the Fans of Wrestling show here on the FOW Radio Network. I am Patrick with Danny Danger, Mick Cavillas, who will be joining us in a little bit. But Danny, it is another week. We already passed Labor Day. How was yours? Do you have a good weekend?
Yeah, man, it's a good long weekend, you know. Nice and restful and relaxing and those kind of things. But, you know, always wrestling going on. You know, we had big events over the weekend, and we're now looking into bigger events coming soon that we're looking forward to. So that's, I mean, we're, you know, onward and onward.
Indeed. So we got a lot of stuff that we cover with All In, Hell in Cell coming up, and then a few other shows. But first off, it sounds like it's official. Daniel Bryan is resigning with WWE. It's not all finalized, but basically everything agreed upon. Everything's good. Did Daniel Bryan make the right move by staying with WWE, where, as you know, guys like Cody Rhodes and the Bucks have shown that being independent and calling your own shot can be a very lucrative option rather than working for the Fed?
I mean, part of it depends on what he wants to do. You know, I think he also, you know, he's at a high enough position that he probably got a pretty good sign on as far as what he'd be paid, merchandise, you know, maybe a little more creative freedom to kind of do what he wants. You know, and his wife is there. Not to say that he owes a lot to WWE, but they probably had a lot to offer him more so than Cody at the time of his, when he left. You know, Cody was kind of floating around, wasn't really doing a whole lot. They weren't doing much with him creatively. You know, the Bucks, even now, I don't think they would want to give the Young Bucks the kind of money that they would be giving up to take a full-time WWE schedule. So those are the right moves for them. You can do it without WWE. That's what people are proving, and that's what, you know, I mean, All In shows that. You know, you had just piles of people who were doing it their own way without WWE. But I think, you know, he probably wants to be there. I mean, he wouldn't have re-signed with them if he didn't want to.
And I'm actually happy that he's there. And I think we already talked about it a week or two ago, all the pluses of him staying there. So good for him. It means that we'll see him on television. That means that on October 30th, when WWE SmackDown Live is here in Atlanta, we'll be able to go see him live. And, you know, a bunch of other things. Maybe he's, you know, who knows? Maybe he'll go back to that main, you know, not main event, but at least that big time WrestleMania match, one-on-one, that he hasn't had in a long time since he won the title. I think that was the biggest moment of his career. Kind of hard to top that, but there were still a lot of questions to be answered that unfortunately we couldn't get answered because of his injuries. But now he's healthy, and you know, and not only him, but now the Bellas are back. Of course, they're going to be wrestling at WWE's Evolution, but here we see them make their debut on Monday Night Raw. Or we make them see their return on Monday Night Raw. How impressed with you about them? They haven't, you know, really wrestled in a long time, and here they are in this position where they're back, the Bell Twins. Your thoughts on their return?
They looked fit. They looked rough. Brie almost killed herself multiple times trying dives. Two separate times she tried dives and didn't quite make them, and could have put herself in the hospital. You know, but thankfully was able to recover, and the people catching her were able to help recover. But they didn't look good. And I know it's, you know, because they want to do this whole Evolution and the Bellas, you know, because they love the Bellas and they're kind of the last, you know, the divas into the Evolution, and they want to do this whole, you know, WWE versus the Four Horsewomen thing, and it seems they want to do that with the Bella Twins as well. So I would say they need to severely talk to, especially Brie, about, you know, restricting her offense. You can work safe without having to, you know, almost kill yourself. It looked bad. Neither of them were really that great to begin with. And now that we've seen another generation of women coming behind them and just show the kind of caliber of athlete that there is in professional wrestling, and then you bring them back, these women are going to run circles around them. And Brie was trying to keep up, and she almost hurt herself. Thankfully, she didn't. You know, I mean, she's a young mother and a wife. Thankfully, she didn't injure herself, but it was very possible that she could have. So with them, maybe it's work smarter, not harder. Let the other people, you know, carry the workload. But I mean, I was never really fans of theirs to begin with, but I understand why WWE wants to use them. They're going to, but they need to sharpen their stuff up and work within their limitations.
Definitely those very good points. I definitely thought same or similar, especially with some of the spots there with Brie. Now, can they get back to where they were? I don't know. I mean, they've been, you know, out of the ring, you know, over a year for both. You know, if not more for Brie, I believe. But they'll be at the Super Showdown. In six women tag action, and still yet determined what capacity, but definitely assume they'll be wrestling at Evolution. So yeah, so I think that maybe it was fine that it happened on Raw, because you know they didn't want to, if something bad happened, they didn't want to happen in pay per view. I would have just preferred they would have done it at a house show, you know, make one of these super special house shows that they like to do and do it there, where they could just do their thing. And, you know, maybe even when they went to Japan, just do something like that. But they didn't. They decided to do it on Raw. It came off, I guess, fine. They got, you know, they're over with the fans, you know, so that at least is a plus. But they still have work to do there. And hopefully they can tweak those things and maybe not dive. Let other people. That's what the younger ones are there for, to do the flippy stuff. So while we're on the subject of the women of wrestling, Women of Wrestling is a TV show that's going to be happening soon on Access TV, and they've signed Tessa Blanchard to be part of that. And she's moving to Southern California. She's gonna be training people there, and for the premiere episode, apparently she's gonna be challenging the Women's of Wrestling champ Santana Garrett. So I'm not exactly sure the premiere date, but what does that mean? I mean, she's on the contract with Impact Wrestling, and now she's on the contract with Women's of Wrestling. And she's going to be on two different TVs. That, to me, is, I mean, I no problem with that, but that's kind of unprecedented for someone to be signed with two different companies with two different TV deals in the United States.
I would assume that there, you know, there's a lot of fine print about, because it's the place she's signing with will be with Access TV instead, you know, it's, versus if it were, say, a competing network with Pop, you know, who's with Impact, that would affect her Impact stuff. But I think both of them are, you know, going to be doing taping styles rather than regular touring schedule. You know, Impact just kind of does tapings every so often, and they do a few house shows here and there, but those, it seems like they haven't done any of those in quite some time. the WoW superheroes, you know, women, WoW has been in various incarnations for many years. It's kind of come and gone. This newest incarnation, I think, is going to be a little bit more like Lucha Underground, kind of more like GLOW, kind of. There's going to be some silliness because it's WoW superheroes. And so I think everybody's kind of getting this character that's meant to be kind of over the top, you know, versus a serious mat-based wrestling. And that could be part of it, you know. It's there's a difference in the product a little bit, but I guess at this point Impact doesn't see them as a competitor, because otherwise they would have told her she couldn't have signed with them, or they would have canceled her contract, you know, in order to make way for the WoW, because the WoW tapings are coming up, you know, in just a month, in October. They announced those October 10th and 11th is the date that they're doing their first set of taping. I don't know when it'll air. I think it won't air until, you know, closer to the new year. But it is very, very big to be essentially signed, whatever capacity those mean, to two non-touring, non-regular brands. But it's, you know, you're technically signed by companies. I guess we'll see what all this means in the long run.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, you mentioned similarities to what GLOW was. Of course, the guy who's now running WoW is the founder of GLOW. So he's capitalizing on the popularity of the Netflix series and taking that and putting out WoW here to hopefully work out. And, you know, I think that with having, you know, Garrett as a champion and having Blanchard as a contender, as well as somebody who's training the other performers, is going to work. You know, I mean, look at Blanchard. You know, she comes from a great lineage of pro wrestlers, as well as her training with George South and getting that. So she knows exactly what to do. You know, she's learned things the right way, and she knows, you know, as she's taking what she's learned, and she can now implement it, show it to other people, and she's a great choice. Of course, my personal preference, I still wish that she was WWE bound, but for one reason or another, it wasn't on the cards for her. But right now, she's having a lot of great success. You know, first becoming the Impact champion not long ago, the Knockouts champion, and now with this new role with WoW, great for her. And I definitely hope that WoW succeeds. You know, I mean, we need to be able to see more of the women's promotions out there get this type of exposure. A lot of people say, oh yeah, well, you know, there's Shimmer, there's Rise, there's Shine. But the thing is that those places do only, like most independents, live shows, and at some point eventually DVDs, pay-per-views, but they don't get what they need, which is that television exposure. And the fact that now you have this company who that's trying to get in that and actually putting them on TV, even though if it's only access and not as many people get access as we'd like. But it's something, it's starting to be somewhere, and maybe that will, you know, be successful enough to where other companies may eventually decide, hey, they want to do the same thing. You know, I believe that Shimmer could very well find a partner, a television partner. You know, look at, you know, they run the shows in Chicago. WGN just proved that they can, you know, to be successful putting out an hour of pro wrestling. I mean, it was only two matches. However, they showed some type of success. What would happen if they pick their local promotion? And then, you know, that would help with the cost, because Shimmer, being a 2-3 day, you know, days of taping, it's a very costly venture to put those shows, which is what they do them all in bulk.
Yeah, because they bring in so many competitors, and then you have to put people up in hotels and travel and all this.
You know, there's so many opportunities out there, and let's hope that the women continue to get those opportunities. A lot of the guys have a lot of opportunities, but I feel like, you know, in this job, you feel like it's like 90% men, 10% women, which there are a lot of quality women out there, and you know, there's still a lot of big fan bases of wrestling fans who are still only WWE fans who would only see it there, and if they don't see it there, it doesn't exist. And that's why I like that WWE does things like the Mae Young Classic and Evolution to be able to get those WWE-centric fans to be able to look at these women and be like, wow, there's a lot of great talent. Let's go ahead and move on to another topic that I want to hit, and that is heel Braun Strowman. Now we've had, you know, a full Monday Night Raw since his heel turn. I guess, well, he was always a heel, right? But it seemed like he, you know, he's very a very popular character. But now going against the Shield, you know, and aligning himself with Dolph Ziggler and Drew McIntyre, is able to be more of a heel and get that type of reaction they need. Is this the Braun Strowman that we needed? And is there a chance that they pull the gun and that they make the decision to put the title on him now? Or do you think Roman Reigns is going to have a longer title reign?
I don't know. It did seem like an unusual decision to try and people to boo him. You know, like they want to cheer for the guy over time. He's charismatic. He's, you know, exceptionally athletic. You know, people want to cheer Strowman and people, but then behind him to an extent. So I guess you put him against the one entity that the fans aren't going to cheer for him over, and that's the Shield. But he was champion right away. Maybe there's a way that the fans will want to see Roman hang on to the belt in this whole instance, you know, but you put him, you align him with two other people who are heels and put him against the top, you know, baby face in the company. I feel it's kind of an odd choice, but WWE wants fans to cheer Roman and boo the guys he's going against. And so I guess you gotta do what you gotta do to make people get the reactions that you want them to have at this point. So we'll see where it goes as it continues. Just yet again, it feels kind of forced a little bit.
I can see that. And I think that they're doing a huge deal about the Shield reuniting, even though they had reunited.
They reunite like every 6 months, yeah.
So it's just like, okay, there's any type of hiatus and they get together and it's a reunion and they get that pop. But I'm not sure how many times you can do that before people start becoming immune to it.
As we see booking, a lot of it seem that decisions are made with the long term in mind. Some things change. So I guess using pop help further certain angles, and while it's still there, you know, they may get to a point where they realize that the getting the Shield back together is going to kind of lose its magic, but right now they're going to keep using the magic while it's there. I think that's the key thing. It's still how long until they don't is really up anyone's guess.
Yeah, definitely. I definitely agree with that. And you know, hey, while it's making him lots of money, we saw, you know, that as soon as the Shield reunited, well, almost 2 weeks ago, they had 3 brand new T-shirts on sale, which I'm sure are selling hotter than the New Day's pancakes.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm sure those, if that kind of shows you that it wasn't literally a decision that day, if they had designs already ready and printed up.
Moving on, it's been announced that the Mixed Tag Challenge is coming back for a second season. Of course, it's going to be premiering on September 18th, exclusively on Facebook Watch. This time, a different concept, as the teams will have a round robin style tournament where we're gonna see 14 30 minute episodes, and there are gonna be two matches at each episode, and there's gonna be finale with the two teams with the highest scores for their brackets facing off at TLC on December 16th. So more like a G1 there style of a tournament for this year's mixed match challenge, or at least for the second season. And here are your teams. On Raw, you have Alexa Bliss and Braun Strowman. Of course, you don't want to mess a good thing when you have it. Sasha Banks and Bobby Lashley. Bayley and Finn Balor. Alicia Fox and Jinder Mahal. And Natalya and Kevin Owens.
The recently returned from quitting Kevin Owens.
Right, right. Because he quit last Monday in August.
And then a week later.
It's a new month. It's a new attitude for good old KO.
Yeah.
Maybe they offer him the mixed match challenge.
And that was the, I'll go ahead and come back if I can do that on Facebook.
So what do you think of the Raw teams?
I mean, you have, you know, a few teams that were the same from last year, but they shook some stuff up. I think it's an interesting concept because they do, you know, it is an interesting concept, but I guess the big thing that's different this year, of course, is the format, and then that you'll have the finals not on Facebook, but they'll actually be on the WWE Network on an event for the Tables, Ladders, and Chairs pay-per-view, so to speak. I think that's the big difference to me, is that it's not just contained in this Facebook alternate universe kind of world, that they're also bringing it to TLC. So I'm getting all the teams on Raw fight, and then that's their round robin. All the teams on SmackDown fight.
So that the finals of Raw versus SmackDown Live. Yes, it should be the finals would be a Raw team versus SmackDown team, I believe. All right, so here's SmackDown Live's teams: Asuka and The Miz. Again, you don't want to mess with a good thing. Naomi and Jimmy Uso. Lana and Rusev, Charlotte Flair and AJ Styles, and Carmella and R-Truth.
I mean, he kept calling Maryse Carmella, you know, so I guess they finally gave him Carmella so that he can understand and finally tell some of these women apart. Last year's winning team together, they're both healthy, why wouldn't you? But then you mix up some people, you put them actual real life couple, you know, that way you can put the Total Divas spin on it too. It is an intriguing format this year with the round robin rather than just a single elimination style tournament.
I'm kind of looking forward to this round robin style and thing. It's slightly different format, and you know, I may take a watch. I think I watched a couple of them from the first season. I might tune in a couple of more times. Got something to look forward to as far as a match here. Now, do you have a favorite, or do you think that the same teams will repeat as last time?
I don't think they're going to have the same teams repeat. I think this, you know, I could see very easily the team of AJ and Charlotte winning their block. Maybe Braun and Alexa Bliss, you know, dominate the Raw side, but I do think another team winning, you know, and they see some built-in feuds there on currently, you know, with Carmella and I don't think they don't have to have Asuka and Miz win at all to protect Asuka's streak, because it's already been broken and she's lost several times. Means since since WrestleMania. So yeah, I think I see the team, at least on SmackDown side, probably AJ and Charlotte be the team to beat on that side.
Yeah, and AJ Styles, the one with the experience with that type of format.
Yeah, yeah, having competed in the G1 Climax before.
Not that we're comparing this to that.
No, but the style format, of course.
So taking a look at Evolution here for a moment, and Super Showdown, of course, they'll be happening next month. But let's go ahead and take a look and see what exactly has been going on and see where we're at. First, with Evolution. Still, match not set for the Women's Championship for both Raw and SmackDown. The NXT Women's Champion, Kairi Sane, still without an opponent also. Then we're going to have the NXT UK Women's Championship, still to be determined, as well as the finals of the Mae Young Classic. But, again, two matches that are non-title matches at this time. Alexa Bliss versus Trish Stratus, which we already talked about. And the last one that's been announced, Lita versus Mickie James.
To me, that match seems to lack some of the punch that the current one does. And it's because Mickie was kind of on the edge of the time here, and then she, you know, went to TNA and took some time away from wrestling and came back to WWE. So I don't consider her, like, if they're trying to do a theme of, you know, kind of the previous generation versus the current generation, I don't consider Mickie really this current, because she didn't go anywhere. It's not like she left wrestling for a long period of time and came back. She's got it. The match just seems to kind of the punch. I feel like it's whether or not I feel like we might have.
Oh, that's it. Okay, after you broke again. Yeah, I know. It's kind of like Mickie James. I mean, I'm glad that she's back. She's a great talent. But coming back, she's lost some. She doesn't feel like a star. And I guess being overshadowed by Alexa, as she's been her psychic for so long already, may not necessarily be the best role for her. And I thought when they separated, then she kind of got lost in shuffle and they put her right back there.
Yeah, they really didn't give her time by herself to try. She alone could be a major player.
But, you know, we may get a few more matches. I'm not sure. But I like it. Once the rest of the field is set, I think it'll be a good one. All right. But what's a good one? In a month, the Super Showdown in Australia. And here's what we got. Undertaker versus Triple H, John Cena and Bobby Lashley versus Kevin Owens and Elias, Daniel Bryan versus The Miz in the number one contendership for the WWE Championship, The Shield versus Braun, Ziggler, and McIntyre, Ronda Rousey and the Bella Twins versus The Riot Squad, AJ Styles versus Samoa Joe for the WWE Championship, Cedric Alexander versus Buddy Murphy for the Cruiserweight Championship, The New Day versus The Bar for the Tag Team Titles, Asuka and Naomi versus The Iconics, and Charlotte Flair versus Becky Lynch for the Women's Championship.
So it feels like, you know, they're making this more of a direct storyline show, kind of like an act, you know, as though it were, you know, a arranged network show, you know, like a TLC or a Survivor Series or something, as opposed to the Greatest Royal Rumble, where it was just kind of a bunch of features. This, I mean, A, they have the whole card laid out more than a month comes, which is very, very rare at WWE these days, to know the entire, you know, almost the entire card so far in advance. Number one contenderships, as well as championship matches, then the Greatest Royal Rumble, which I guess is unusual, but it could be good. I don't know. I feel that it, when I was watching TV this week, they were talking about this match on television. So it feels, it definitely feels different.
Yeah, I mean, it's a soul show in Australia, and they want to make it big and important, like the Saudi Arabia show. I think, you know, originally in October, they were going to have TLC happen. And between doing the Evolution pay-per-view and then this Super Showdown in Australia, they decided to move TLC from October to December. And they're treating basically Super Showdown as the show that would have been following the storylines of TLC. So I can definitely understand that, and that they're keeping all the storylines intact to happen at the show, because they need to, you know, do that, because that was their plan already. Before it became the Super Showdown, it was going to be TLC in October, and that's what they were going to get. We probably were going to get a card very much like it. All right, and now moving on, we now have Tamika back with us, so let's go ahead and discuss the show that was All In. Out of Chicago, Illinois, of course, 0 Hour took place on WGN television. And first we got the Briscoes teaming up against the so-called Uncensored, Frankie Kazarian, and Scorpio Sky. And here, SoCal Uncensored picked up the win in 12-plus minutes.
It was cute. It was really cute. I love the shout-out to the Rocky franchise. You had Scorpio Sky in the Apollo Creed outfit, Frankie Kazarian in the Rocky outfit. They came out and kind of hyped up the crowd. It's like, oh my God, we're in Chicago. It's the worst city I've ever been to. But that was Scorpio Sky. But Frankie was like, you know, come on, let's give us a big SCU. The crowd was hot. I mean, this was the first match. I was surprised at this being the first match on 0 Hour that they were giving away such a esteemed tag team. You have Kazarian, who has years and years of experience. And of course, the Briscoe brothers, who are ROH's farm talent, or the, you know, raised from the ground up talent. So I was like, oh, okay, this is first. Let's go. Let's see. So them boys and SCU, they're no strangers to each other. They did what they were supposed to do, getting the crowd amped and hyped and setting the pace, I guess, for the rest of the 0 Hour and subsequent All In.
I definitely do think that that first match was a good way to start, only because you get the Briscoes. And you got SoCal Uncensored, you got some guys who are pros who are not going to screw anything up. Good way to start the show. Which was then followed by the 19th man over the budget battle royal. Which, of all people, Flip Gordon, who was supposed to be All Out.
Flip.
He was All In as he got in as a masked luchador. Who's ever thought about that? And then he went in and eliminated the person who thought they had won in Bully Ray. And eliminated him. And thus, Flip Gordon wins the Battle Royal and earns a shot against Jay Lethal for the Ring of Honor Championship later that night at the pay-per-view.
So Flip had been, you know, onto the show since it was announced. He'd been trying, and they kept finding ways to shut him out. The Bullet Club cut him out. Cody didn't want Flip Gordon on the show, but he managed to find a way, kind of by sneaking his way in, and would earn himself, you know, his first shot at the ring of ship at the main card of All In. There were a lot of tongue-in-cheek kind of things going on in this match, and I think that was kind of a theme, you know, kind of this blur the lines of behind the scenes and in front of the camera. You know, Billy Gunn was there. I thought that was kind of weird. He has a son who wrestles, apparently, who was also there. I didn't know anything about that. But it was an odd mix of people. Fun to see some of them in there. You know, but it was, I think, fans who, you know, a lot better feel of what the full show would be.
You're right. It was very tongue in cheek. There was a lot of craziness going. The fact that they call this the over the budget battle royal. I think originally there were supposed to be maybe 10 to 12 participants. They wound up with, gosh, who knows how many. You had some throwbacks. You had Chuck E. T. and Trent Beretta, the best friends. You talked about Austin Gunn, Billy Gunn's son, who had on his, you know, trunks similar to his dad, threw the suck it sign a couple times. Standouts for me, Marco Stunt, who I saw SCI Weekend for the first time. He was in there, and he is so little. Brian Cage, Jordan Grace, just these people who are huge and small. The difference in heights and strengths and what have you was apparent, but entertaining nonetheless. The whole thing gets won by Flip Gordon. Flip, who, you know, kind of eased his way in there, being BFFs with Brandi Rhodes, because you can say Brandi and Rhodes together, that's perfectly fine. Bully Ray, of course, thinking he won the thing, sour grapes as far as that goes, but it was an entertaining battle royal to kind of set the stage for an entertaining match between Flip Gordon and Jay Lethal later in that night.
Yeah, I definitely thought the battle royal was fun. It had its usual suspects, and of course, another name that we haven't seen with most of the ROH talent in a while, One Moose, was there as well. So it was a fun little thing there, and a lot of different wrestlers got to do their thing. They were all over, so they're all part of them. So we move on to the main card, and we kick off with MJF versus Matt Cross in your opening match. I thought it was a pretty solid match. It went 12 plus minutes. But we're going to talk about the length of it for a second. People complained about the show being long. Of course, the whole show, excluding 0 hour, was almost 4 hours. So from 7 to 11.
These fans have never actually been into an independent show if they feel that a 4 hour is hard.
Yeah. Well, people just complain about it. So
people just like to complain about stuff. That's all they do.
I will say, though, this match, while it was good, I thought that, you know, let's be honest, it probably felt out of place, being that every other match on the main card included one of the core Being the Elite cast members. This is the only one that did not. I really thought that these two were going to be part of the over-the-budget Battle Royal, and I think they might have been better served there. That would have helped also with time if indeed that was an issue. The match was good, though. Don't get me wrong. But it did feel a little out of place. I'm a big fan of MJF, and I really think that he's got a bright future ahead of him.
This match, as much as anything, was pay homage to the independent scene for almost 20 years now. You know, an innovative And I think that was kind of the main point of putting him in the battle. I do believe that Matt Cross is, I think he, they mentioned on the independent scene. I think that's pretty true, because he's think of as like being a top level, top guys on the, every time I see him, he always sucks. He knows how to pace stuff, set things to draw you into a match that even on paper or not be that interested in. So I think it was a good match. I enjoyed it. The matches have been, and you know, they did well together. I get what you're saying, where it did seem out once as the show went on that, you know, that they were kind of really fit in with the rest of the group, so to speak.
Yeah, the placement of this match, this is what kind of got me. It was a great match, like you guys said, but I felt that the second match on the card should have been the first match. MJF and especially Matt Cross being a 20-year plus veteran, I think that they should have been the second match in, and they could have maybe had a little more time taken away from that first match of a male versus Daniels, and to kind of work the crowd and kind of get more of their their shit in, so to speak, if they had been the second match up. Again, no disrespect for the match that they had. It was fine. It was dandy. But I don't think that was the proper match for the kickoff of the show. But who am I? You know, I'm just the fan calling the book from the seat here. So,
all right, so the second match is your celebrity appearance match, as Stephen Amell goes one-on-one with Christopher Daniels, which I always liked that it was Daniels, because he was going to be the safest choice to make sure you go in and take care of the celebrity. Amell, although he's been in the ring before, still very limited. They went 12 minutes, and you could see probably about halfway in that Stephen Amell was getting a little gassed.
You do not talk about Arrow like that. That guy can go.
But kudos, hey, he was on the offseason. But kudos to him, because, man, he held his own. And even the times where, you know, it looked like it was getting rough for him, he went out and he delivered, you know, for it being a publicity type of match more than anything else. I was happy with it. Was it a great match? Not by a long shot, you know, but it was a good match, and I'm proud of what Amell did, and, you know, he did not wrong the city of Chicago by his performance, and I'm happy for that. Of course, Daniels here taking the win.
Yeah, you put Daniels in with, if you need somebody to be taken care of, I mean, the 20-year vet, you know, one of the best on the scene for a long, long time. This was, you know, Amell, they mentioned it was his third professional match, only his first singles match. So you put him in there with Daniels. You put Jerry Lynn in the referee role. I guess they could need to give Amell more time or something. You know, but it was a good match for what it was worth. Daniels, of course, picks up the win. To make them 2-0 for the night.
The first, and again, I am of course a huge fan of Stephen Amell, and his body of work on Arrow is fantastic. I love the fact that he came to the ring with one of his nemesis from the show, Prometheus. I don't know the actor's name, and I don't care. I just know he was Prometheus on Arrow, and it was awesome to see them together. Vigilante Club shirt, Prometheus Club shirt, little arrows on his trunks. You know, Stephen Amell is a huge wrestling fan, and he was more than game for this match. I was, of course, knowing that Daniels was going to take care of the celebrity, but I was surprised in all that Amell did. I did not expect him, for one, to go through a table. I really, really thought Daniels was going to take that bump and, you know, we'd be done with it. And Amel perhaps pick up the win just because. But lo and behold, Amel set that table. He went through it. Daniels picks up the win and Celebrity's still safe. Everybody's safe face. Really good match. Again, I would have put that as the first match. I'd have shaved a few minutes off of it. Very, very pleased and happy with what I saw from Stephen Amell. I'd book him on my wrestling show if, you know, I could get that booking to happen.
All right, next up, we get the four-corner survival match where Tessa Blanchard defeats Chelsea Green, Madison Rayne, and Britt Baker. They win about 12 minutes as well. I thought it was a very good match. Sort of disappointed there was only one women's match, but I'm going to hate for the best in the Indies got to be all in. And I thought they did a very good job. I really enjoyed the match and their performance.
One of the more athletic, like sprint type four corner women's matches that I've seen in a while. You know, especially when you look at the Indies, they don't do four corners a lot. But you had four very athletic women and they all went out there. The girls brought it. They knew they had to deliver big for that crowd. And they did multiple standing ovations, were into the big matches, you know, big moments.
It was great to see. I know people wanted to see more girls' matches, or perhaps this four-way could have been broken down into two separate matches. But each one of these girls, they had plenty of time to establish character, ring work. Britt Baker, of course, shouting out her hubby, her man's Adam Cole coming out to his ROH theme. Chelsea Green giving a shout out to her man, Zack Ryder, with the, I want to call it the bride ski boot that she did. I don't know. Tessa Blanchard is Tessa Blanchard. You undeniable, just a talent to behold when she's between those ropes. It was great to see her father, her, you know, the generational kind of being there and cheering her on. And I'm missing one of the girls, Chelsea, Britt, Madison Rayne. What can you say about Madison Rayne other than, you know, here she is, a veteran in the sport now, a mom, and having just probably one of the best years of her career, being Impact, being an ROH, Mae Young Classic, All In, you know, and I think they made not a joke, but probably the truth, like, and she put her kid in kindergarten. You know, like these girls all have such diverse backgrounds and they got to showcase themselves on a level that had never been done before. And they honestly picked this crowd up and got the crowd going. This match, I think, was a turning point for me where I was watching. And I was like, okay. So I literally at that point when the girls started, when they got going, I was truly all in then.
Next up, we have a match that everybody's been waiting for the NWA World Heavyweight Championship. Nick Aldis defense versus Cody Rhodes. Of course, Cody had on his corner Brandi Rhodes, Diamond Dallas Page, Glacier, and Tommy Dreamer. Nick Aldis had on his corner Jeff Jarrett, Samuel Shaw, Sean Devari, and Tim Storm. And here we go. 22 minutes. They fought. They bled for those 10 pounds of gold. And in the end, Cody Rhodes added to the legacy of the Runnels family as he became the new NWA World Heavyweight Champion. I thought that the match was really good. I thought probably, and I'm not sure how big of a take this may be, but one of the better matches I've seen Cody have in a while. not that I've seen every single Cody match, but from the ones I have seen, I thoroughly enjoyed this one. And Nick Aldis, probably the favorite match I've seen of him ever. So to me, I really enjoyed it. I really enjoyed how important they made the NWA Championship feel. And, you know, for once, I found myself rooting for Cody.
I was looking for a match, and I saw Nick Aldis do an Indian World title defense against Matt Cross at a Next Gen show in Tennessee, and that was where I was saying that draw you into matches that I didn't know I wanted to care versus Matt Cross for the NWA title, but they did such a good job. They put the entire crowd in that night for that match. So I expected a lot coming in. I was into the match, and then they did that weird stalling spot, and Earl Hebner threw up the fake X when Cody was down there bleeding, and was going to throw the towel. And they just kind of stood around for a while. Like, I felt they did too much stuff like that that actually hindered, to me, it hindered when they, and then they slowly went back. Then when Brandy came in, and I felt that there was just so much going on that it actually drew me out of the match. And after that, Big Cody came back and was bleeding. I didn't really care about the match they had, and I didn't really get back into it by the time it ended. So to me, the match fell flat. And I think, I don't know if they were trying to eat up time or they were trying to do more with it in the midway segments while Cody was drew on a little long. But it just didn't do it for me. It lost me, and I was disappointed.
Now, see, in talking about who came to the ring, Patrick left out a very, very important member of the Nightmare family. That was Pharaoh, the wolf dog of Cody and Brandy. That's important because, you know, that point where Cody took that kind of spill bad bump off the apron, DDP was in charge of Pharaoh. During the proceedings, and I guess Pharaoh needed to go and either have a smoke or a potty break. I'm gonna say a smoke break. He's a wolf. He smokes cigarettes. He's a badass. So I think DDP was supposed to be there to help Cody not hardway himself and maybe, you know, get a little color in this match because it's a Rhodes match for the NWA title. Needs a little color. That's why DDP became hair. Right, yeah. So that's why DDP had to sprint and do flips and yoga poses to get to ringside to assist Cody. But I blame Pharaoh for that. That's why we went a little long with that match. But outside of that, I guess I should not have been surprised that Cody won, but I was surprised that Cody won. Just based on the fact that, you know, yes, it is a tradition and it's in his lineage and what have you for him to hold this title. I didn't think that this special all-in extravaganza that he was heading up, he would win that title. It just would be too much, but it was a great moment. I love the fact that Brandy took that elbow. I think that whenever a woman goes down to the ring to accompany a guy, especially her husband, and to help keep it real, you need to do everything and anything. If that means taking a hit and giving one, then you do that. So Brandy taking that elbow to the back, man, mistaken elbow to the back, was for me a moment because that showed her dedication to making sure that her man came out on top. That's good wifing and good managing right there.
Well, now that Cody is the champion, there are questions because he is under contract exclusively with Ring of Honor. Of course, I believe this had to probably be approved by Ring of Honor because now Cody has to defend this championship, and he will be defending the NWA Championship, I believe, at the 70th NWA anniversary that will be happening later on this year versus Nick Aldis, I believe. So there you go. You know, if he's got other stuff he's got to do, and that may mean that he'll probably lose the title back to Nick Aldis. But it was nice for Cody. He got the title. Now he can, you know, feel again like a Rhodes.
Well, I mean, you're booking the show, brother. Why wouldn't you book yourself to win? Why wouldn't you book that you always wanted? That's classic wrestler booker 101, okay? Put yourself over. Put yourself over. Become break gold streak, okay? That's just how it is in this business, brother.
Again, I shouldn't have been surprised, but I was. I mean, yeah, it's classic 101, but I was just like, nah, he's not going to do that. He's not going to do that. Let everybody see Booker 101. Oh, he did it.
But everybody loved it. And that's the difference that sometimes when bookers come in and do that. They made the fans care, feel that it was something important, something they wanted to see. A theme throughout the show is most of the outcomes were quote unquote predictable. You kind of knew, you had an idea of who was going to win when you went in, but they did a good job of entertaining, of telling stories. They didn't ruin things just because you may know who already was going to win.
Up next, we get a Chicago street fight. 20 minutes of action. Hangman Page defeats Joey Janela. I thought this match was really fun. You know, Janela is over like Rover. And, you know, Hangman Page, well, of course, he's part of the BD Elite cast, so people like him. But, yeah, Joey and Penelope, the bad boy and the bad girl, did their thing, and Joey did the favors. Hangman Page with the dubs.
As fun as the match was, and all the stuff that they did, it overshadowed by anything that came after.
Because afterwards, Joey Ryan and the Peni,
they called the Elision a cock. But basically, it was a dozen guys dressed in inflatable penis costumes. Came out like for the Undertaker as Joey Ryan.
Yeah, see, I didn't get that part. I mean, I think I understand the shtick. Again, you know, kudos to Joey for getting over with it and everything. But that whole thing, they could have done without that. That was, you know, we're talking about the time, right? Time. This was filler time that they did not need. It took a hot minute to get set up. I could see the Peni a mile away.
Okay. Yeah, people were saying whatever elite type stuff. This was a show so long. Do it with them, you know, bringing in the boots, the talking to pay, convince, you know, confess to killing Joey and all this. It was fun. It was silly. It got over like crazy. You know, I mean, this and a couple of things kind of ran on for time and it seemed the show very, very quickly because they had to be like done by a horror. You know, the straw that was still in the ring at the end. So I mean, this was obviously something that was important to them because they put a lot into it of being the elite was revealed in this. And, you know, in theory, it sets up a perfect match when we come back for All In 2.
I liked it. I liked the goofiness. I liked the silliness of it. We touched upon Penelope and Joey Janela. They did what they came to do. Penelope, this was the best I've seen her. She absolutely represented, you know, a strong female, I don't want to say just manager or sidekick, but just a strong female partner. But yeah, the big story were the big Peni and all the craziness that ensued around that. But again, it was a setup. And if you watch Being the Elite, this is part of the storyline. It flowed. It was fun. And it did not matter how long it took time-wise because they had it planned, they wanted to do it, and they just did it.
And we know you don't like fun in wrestling, Patrick, so we knew you weren't going to really like this segment because you don't like Joey Ryan and you don't like, you know, Chucky T, and like you don't like fun in wrestling, really. So we knew that if there was going to be one segment that you and Jim Cornette were going to agree on, it would be this one.
Up next, we get the Ring of Honor Championship match where Black Machismo, ooh yeah, Jay Lethal,
with Leaping Lanny Poffo,
successfully defends the championship against Flip All In Gordon, who was accompanied by Brandi Rhodes.
Everybody talked about Poffo and Black Machismo, but let's not forget Brandi had a Miss Elizabeth moment, whether she liked it or not, which was also really cute with really.
The match was okay for itself. I'm not really a big Flip Gordon fan. Jay Lethal doesn't really do a whole lot for me, but it was kind of fun to see Black Machismo back, even if for one night only. Apparently, they claimed that that jacket was the was actually Macho Man's jacket that he wore one of his first WCW creation. But it made for yet again another cool moment. The match was all right. Jay Lethal, for whatever reason, still just kind of weirds me out with his bald head. It just doesn't seem right. So the match was okay for what it was worth. Jay Lethal gets the win, Lethal Injection.
It was another fun type match. Lethal on and off with the Machismo or Macho Man, because they just went straight, you know, Macho Man with this. It was great seeing Poffo out there with the Brother from Another Mother shirt, throwing the Frisbees out. And just Lethal doing the Macho Man is a art. If you watched any of Macho Man and you watched Lethal in his movements, when Macho Man threw a punch, he would grab the back of your head and pull you and punch you at the same time, instead of like having a hand on a shoulder or something. There was just little things that Lethal does or did as Macho Man were so Macho Man that I think you have to kind of go back and watch old Randy Savage and go, holy crap, Lethal has it down pat. I love the shout out to Elizabeth and Macho, like, hey, you stand in this corner and don't move. And just, it was cute. It was good. Yes, Flip Gordon was not going to win the ROH title. I knew that, but he got to showcase his skills against a veteran in ROH and one of ROH's standard bearers, and to kind of put himself out there as well as being this new up-and-coming indie darling, which is kind of what this was, an indie darling prom, so to speak.
All right, well, next up was my match of the night, and this match was a very anticipated match between two of the best in their field as the IWGP Heavyweight Champion, the Cleaner, Kenny Omega, defeated Penta El Cero M. I thought the match was great. It was well done. Great storytelling. The two guys went at it. They probably held back a little because, you know, I could have seen them go for another 10 minutes. But, man, everything they did was great. I loved it. Can't say enough about it. But, of course, Omega hits the One-Winged Angel for the win. And afterwards, apparently, Penta El Y2J came out and attacked Kenny and then told him that he'd see him at the Jericho Cruise, which is happening this fall.
Of the quote-unquote dream matches that this show featured, to me, this is really the only dream. This is the only match that I saw announced, go, wow, like that's a match that we wouldn't really see anywhere else just because these guys are contracted different places. And the match absolutely delivered. And yeah, Jericho comes out. That was a cool reveal. You know, they talk the story about Jericho saying that he, you know, he felt the show was beneath him, and even though he had been on the Jericho cruise, they're taping that match. I don't know if it's going to be seen. He felt the need to have a cool moment and have him set up tickets. But it was definitely a cool reveal. Match, yeah, he's gonna win. Not gonna have him job. He was, you know, this kind of show as well. He wasn't gonna lose, but it was a fantastic match. Both guys went out there and threw it. And
the match was phenomenal. I don't know why the title holder did not actually have his title with him. Perhaps it did not clear customs. I don't know, but he didn't need it.
Well, it was a non-title match. They said it was so, you don't even need to bring the belt out. I guess, I don't know.
It was a non-title match. It was Kenny Omega, who usually comes to the ring with a lot of pomp and circumstance, who was not, for me, Omega'd out. He was just like, okay, somebody said we got a house show, Kenny. I was like, oh, shit. Okay, we got a house show, Kenny, with no title. And okay, fine. That's cool, you know.
Well, did you see Pence? It seemed that Pence, he didn't come out in his full get up. His music played for a little bit, and then when he came out, he had his in his hand. He was trying to put, and he took it off because he couldn't get it on all the way. So the guys didn't know they were supposed to be coming. Supposed to come with the you know, with an extra attire, maybe not, and he just wasn't ready. I don't know. But ready, so yeah, that was kind of odd that Kenny didn't even wear a t-shirt or a jacket or by himself.
But again, house show Kenny and not ready Penta were phenomenal as far as ring work. And then you know the ending and the everything that happened with you know, the lights going out and shenanigans ensuing was perfect. I loved it.
All right, well, moving on to the longest match of the night, and this one 26 plus minutes. I think this one went too long for my liking. I they lost my attention like early on the match. I think 15 minutes would have been better, but I understand Okada doesn't know how to wrestle for less than 20 minutes. So you get 26 plus minutes, and Okada defeats Marty's Curl with the Rainmaker again. I will stand by this. Okada has the best dropkick and the best lariat of any variation in the wrestling business. So it was definitely a treat for the Chicagoans, and well, most people were probably not from Chicago.
Chicagoans. I don't know what you just said, but Chicagoans.
So, yes, a treat for everyone there live and for those watching around the world. But Okada victorious because you ain't bring him to do a job, baby.
It did go too long. And I believe that is why our main event had to go and be rushed and what have you. But it was great to see Okada and do his thing. And thankfully, somebody in the Bullet Club had to take the L. And because I just thought, like, if everybody's going to win in the Bullet Club, what's the point? So thankfully, Marty stepped up to take the L. Took him a while to take the L, but he did.
It was a long time to work 12 minutes. Okay. The big story that they kept trying to push was to go to the heavyweight division. Is he ready to be a heavyweight division wrestler, even though he wants to talk about him, you know, trying to pack on weight comedically and, you know, about eating nuts. He was going to pack on the pounds. He's still under 200 pounds. You know, so this was, you know, you want him to prove he can be a heavyweight wrestler, best heavyweight in the world, in Okada. of course, they had a great match. I think, you know, at this point, if you're a halfway decent capable wrestler, you can have a phenomenal match with Kazuchika Okada. He is that good. I'm still not really a huge Skrull fan. I've never have been. But yet again, he looked good against Okada, so you're going to look good against Okada. You have this, but you could see that they were running as soon as the match pretty much was rolling to the outside. Marty was rolling to the outside. They were cutting to the graphic before the guys even got a, as they knew they were running short for time at this point, and out get the next guys in so they could do the thing and close out the show. I don't know if the match went too long unintentionally, but it definitely did go a long time. It could have been a bit shorter, but it was a good match. I enjoyed it. You know, a lot of matches, even if he's against somebody I don't really care for, bring it. He is the best in the world.
All right. Well, and that brings us to our main event of the evening, where the Golden Elite, Kota Ibushi and the Young Bucks, defeat Rey Mysterio, Rey Fénix, and El Bandido in six-man tag action. Which, of course, this is going to be your usual, you know, flippy old high spots kind of thing here with the Luchadors. It definitely did not disappoint. Perfect timing, I assume. You know, again, like Jimmy Cubs, right? Probably everything else was too long, so they just had to cut it short. But hey, perfect, right? You got all the guys to do all their stuff, and you know, at the age Mysterio, he doesn't have to work a long time, just a few minutes, get in there, do your thing. He looked great, everybody looked great. Liked the match a lot, really enjoyed it. You know, I enjoy a flippy move as much as the next guy. And with that, All In comes to a conclusion. How did you guys enjoy the main event?
I was all in for the main event. I mean, that was my first time really paying attention and seeing Bandido, so I was blown away. Rey Mysterio is still amazing. Rey understands big pay-per-views. He came out in his Wolverine outfit, so he gave the people a visual before he even, you know, got in the ring and did his flippy stuff. Golden Elite, again, we know what they're capable of. Everybody in this match was able to rush it without rushing, making it feel and look really, really rushed. That's the mark of a professional. It was interesting that the six-man was the main event, but I was glad it was because, again, it was a perfect match to get everybody kind of just hyper and going and going and going and then, you know, send them home happy.
I mean, the main event came out and fired right off, fired quick. They might have had more time originally, but everybody came in, moved quick, got their shit in, hit the big move. You know, as the Impact champion, you knew Rey Mysterio, no Bandido was taking a loss for his team. But yet again, that didn't take exciting. All the big stuff, crazy dives, head drops. You know, we saw the more bang for your buck, you know, mixed in with Ibushi edition. We saw the Meltzer driver. You know, we saw the 619. Rey Jr. hit all of his big moves as well. Everybody impressed and sent the crowd home happy. The show cut off. You know, the match ended. They didn't even offs. I guess they had a very, very, very hard 11 o'clock. They had to end the show by Fight TV. So I think they kind of went and, you know, there was a bit more of a thank you in the ring and Ken. I felt it was a good show overall, I enjoyed it. I know there are a lot of people that kind of at this point, people feel a lot of fans. There's either very, very strong love for the Bullet Club and all of that stuff, or they're completely over it and they hate it and they hate everything they do. So I, judging from other reactions from a lot of the fans, kind of had their minds when they went in, whether love it and love everything that came down to it, or they were going to find ways to just dump all over it. And that's kind of the reactions we've been getting all week, you know, is that people, oh, it's amazing. It's like the Woodstock professional wrestling, man. This is, you know, hey, we're doing a game. This is going to be huge. Biggest night indie wrestling. Other people were just like, oh, it's dumb, it's stupid. It was too silly. It was all a bunch of matches nobody cared about. You know, it was a one-off matches. Wasn't a whole lot of big story. There, you know, some of the matches had story from being the Elite, you know, Ring of Honor storylines, but a long-term story, because there's, you know, what goes on from here. Everybody divides back up and goes back to their own universes or regular story. I had a lot, even though when I saw a lot of paper, I was kind of, you know, I could take or leave it, but I did enjoy the show throughout.
Yeah, definitely. I enjoyed All In. All In was pretty darn good. It was solid throughout. For the most part, I watched it on demand. So I kind of watched it in parts, like one half and then the other half. So I didn't feel like I was sitting through 3 or 4 or 5 hours of, you know, one straight show. So that kind of helped it for me. But yeah, All In was very good, and it was very successful, obviously. It did well on pay-per-view, and it did well on the WGN, as far as for their expectations, I'm sure. So I'm happy for them. I'm happy it worked out. You know, they could sell a 10,000 stadium. Now can they try to sell a 15,000 stadium or 20,000? Let's not get ahead of ourselves. For all we know, you know, they're, you know, literally bound. Of course, the rumors continue to be that with contracts being no at the end of the year, but who knows? Anything could happen in the wacky world of professional wrestling, and will they stick together, or will they go somewhere together, or will they go their separate ways? Will they be All In again? There's a lot to be determined, but what this showed is that, heck, they could do their own show if they wanted to anytime and do very well. And of course, a big assist for Ring of Honor for supporting this venture. And as Cody Rhodes, I think, said, he hopes that they can produce another show again. So we'll see what happens. All in due time. Now, before we close this down, let's take a look at this Sunday's Hell in a Cell pay-per-view, which is happening on the award-winning WWE Network for only $9.99, free for brand new subscribers. And in no particular order, we've got Charlotte Flair versus Becky Lynch, Jeff Hardy versus Randy Orton in a Hell in a Cell match, Ronda Rousey versus Alexa Bliss for the Women's Championship, Roman Reigns versus Braun Strowman in a Hell in a Cell match for the Universal Championship. And this is the official cash-in for Mr. Monster in the Bank. The New Day will be defending the Tag Team Championships against a team to be determined. AJ Styles will be defending the WWE Championship versus Samoa Joe. And Daniel Bryan and Brie Bella will be wrestling The Miz and Maryse in a mixed tag team match.
All right. So, Hell in a Cell is upon us, and it seriously came super quick for me. I was like, wait, it's Hell in a Cell already? As far as my predictions go, I'm going to say that the Bellas win the mixed tag. That's Daniel Bella and Brie Bella. AJ Styles will go home empty-handed. Samoa Joe will finally be making his promise to Wendy Styles, and Daddy's coming home type of deal. He'll make that happen. New Day will retain against whoever they decide to put in there. Who cares? Roman and Braun. Roman Reigns will retain. Braun will go down as another loser who called his cash-in spot and didn't win. There will be shenanigans from the Shield. Ronda and Alexa. Ronda keeps the title because it's her first pay-per-view defense, and they were trying to build a brand around her. Jeff Hardy and Randy Orton. Orton is going to throw Hardy off the top of a Hell in a Cell and win, because Hardy's death has to be in a Hell in a Cell, apparently. I think that's in his contract. And Becky Lynch versus Charlotte Flair. Who cares? Becky is going to have to cry because Woo will win, not because she's better than Becky, but because her robes are fabulous and have more sparkles than the belt itself.
Self-show match. Only one is for the champion. It's a set show, you know, so I'm guessing that there are, that everything will get decent time. I don't expect a lot of surprises, you know. I'm guessing Miz and Maryse, because they got, I'm going with Samoa Joe. Day's not going to lose. Whoever they bring in, it doesn't matter. Even though it's supposed to stop everybody from coming in, and maybe it is going to turn into some kind of six-man shenanigans. And I do think Roman is on, because that's what it's going to take. It's going to basically have the Shield's going to have to put Braun down. Rousey's going to beat Bliss on the belt to WrestleMania. The belt this quickly. Jeff Hardy wins. I feel that this man there, like, I know they put a lot of story. Tried to, but I still just, I'm not really interested or that excited for Randy Orton, Jeff Hardy. I'm not, it's something different. As we've discussed many a times, I'm unable to bet against Becky Lynch to do the ginger code. Not that I would, especially against Becky's time is now. She's not the heel in this. Charlotte is, because she's terrible. Becky is a ginger angel and can when everything that she's done to try and make her a heel is completely and utterly justified. The fans, and when Becky wins.
All right. Well, my predictions, I have Daniel Bryan and Brie Bella being successfully beating Miz and Maryse. AJ Styles will retain the WWE Championship. The New Day will lose their tag team championships. Roman Reigns will retain the Universal Championship. Ronda Rousey will retain the Women's Championship. Randy Orton will defeat Jeff Hardy. And Charlotte Flair will retain the Women's Championship as well. So a lot of fun predictions there to see who actually gets them right and you guys get them wrong. And with that, this Sunday, 7 p.m. Eastern Time, let's not forget they're now starting at 7 p.m. and ending whenever they feel like it, because they control their own network. So big power to them. Only on the award-winning WWE Network for $9.99, free for new subscribers. Check that out now. So that's it for tonight. Thank you for listening. Make sure you subscribe to the FOW Radio Network on iTunes, TuneIn, Stitcher, Podbean, and Google Play. Make sure you follow us on the Twitter machine at FOW Radio. Danny's on Twitter at Danny F in Danger. Mika's on Twitter at Mika Villas. I'm on Twitter at YellowmanPA. And until next time, keep watching wrestling.